I am Jamisha Millard, and today I'm speaking with Jeffrey Bradley, the co-chair of Books to Prisoners. Books to Prisoners is a community-run initiative aimed at keeping prisoners educated by sending them books across Canada and the United States.
Jeffrey Bradley, and I'm the co-chair of Books to Prisoners Ottawa. I'm also a PhD student in legal studies at Carleton University, and more recently a board member with the Ontario Research Group at Carleton University as well.
Can you tell me a bit more about Books to Prisoners, why the initiative was originally launched?
So Books to Prisoners was, it's basically a grassroots prisoner justice collective on the unceded and unsurrendered Algonquin territory, so here in Ottawa, which sends books and writes letters to incarcerated people basically across Canada. And we also correspond and send books to a number of people in the United States, particularly California and Texas, just because they actually have large prison populations and there's just a need for it. So those are kind of the main activities that we do. We also engage in sort of prison justice and activism and stuff like that, or for prisoners, human rights, and, you know, fighting the ever-growing prison industrial complex. But the initiative originally started in around 2002, 2003 from students and staff at the Ontario Public Interest Research Group at Carleton University. And they were inspired by like prison activism that was going on at other PIRGs, like especially like in Montreal. And the main purpose of the project originally was like basically to use the resources in the Ottawa community, namely like books, and deliver those donations directly to prisoners. And the project just sort of ties together sort of research regarding prison regulations, programming, and accessibility, and then bringing education to the public about, you know, the conditions of confinement and bringing the voices of prisoners to the public and, you know, in our direct actions with them and working in solidarity with them, sending them books, but like building those relationships through correspondence and literature, because there's such a need for books and because literacy rates are quite low also in prison. So it helps in that regard as well.
So according to you, how and why are books essential to the well-being of people who are incarcerated?
Yeah, so I think like books in general are basically essential for the well-being of prisoners, because like I said, it increases their literacy skills, helps them increase, you know, their learnings and critical thinking, and they can build skills, you know, whether it's learning about how the law works and how they can, you know, fight for their rights, or, you know, learning about things like cooking or sewing. We get a lot of requests for that type of stuff. But I think the literature itself can also help in sort of resisting, you know, the industrial complex that's going on and sort of the institutionalization that happens when people are incarcerated. And I think it gives them hope, you know, for a better future, in the sense that there is people on the outside that care and want to send in literature to them and want to correspond with them and connect them with community resources, and that, you know, we're not further shunning them from society and trying to sort of build that connection with people that are incarcerated for various reasons. And we hope in our advocacy that we can help, you know, uphold their human dignity while they're, you know, incarcerated, and sort of fighting to ensure that they're reintegrated and that their humanness is respected. And just that simple act of kindness, right? Of just, there's people on the outside that care and want to work in solidarity with them and make changes, you know? So there's a number of rules, like even the United Nations has like minimum rules for the treatment of prisoners. They're also known as the Mandela rules. And one of them is specifically around how every prison needs to have a library, so that there's they basically need to have libraries so that there's a category, different, you know, genres of books, and that it's like, you know, well-stocked and, you know, encouraging its use. But, you know, from our understanding is that, like, although that there's, you know, there is libraries, there often is a lot of barriers to get these books because of lockdowns and various security, you know, static security, where they can't necessarily get to the library or get the books, right? So especially because, you know, there's rules around prisons not accepting books that are like hardcover, and, you know, there's censorship on the types of content that can be sent in. And some of that you can understand, but, you know, I know in some of the US states, like, they've banned, you know, books that are critical of criminalization and punishment. A book that I remember that was banned was like, you know, Our Prison's Obsolete by Angela Davis. I know that that one was banned, and prisoners are not having access to books that are critical of the system, right?
Like against the system?
Yeah, like any sort of literature like that, or The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander, you know, where it's making the case that, you know, Black and brown communities are over-policed and, you know, over-criminalized and come into contact with the criminal justice, or, I mean, it's so-called criminal justice system, and are, you know, in prison for long periods of time. And even when they come back to the community, they're branded, right, with a almost like a second-class citizen status, is the way that Michelle Alexander has labeled it, where they're excluded again, right? Because they're labeled with a criminal record, and then they can't get jobs. They can't get into housing. They're, you know, there is some, obviously, community reentry supports, but the barriers and the stigma is really difficult to overcome. So I know I've kind of gone on a tangent.
Oh, no, that was great. That was great. I actually didn't even know that prison systems or whoever is in charge could ban some types of books.
I think it's less common in Canada, from my understanding, but there is still some stuff that is, you know, not allowed, that they would consider radical or, you know, maybe critical of the system, you know? So yeah, I what I've read anyways is a lot of these books are banned in the States. I don't really know if they're all banned here in Canada, but certainly there is books that we get returned where they'll say, you know, content is not appropriate or stuff like that. So it can be challenging, you know, because we have to always think, okay, so what's this book about? Like, is it, you know, is it promoting things like how to escape, or like, is it, you know, and some of that you can probably understand because the prison administration doesn't want resistance, you know, so in that sense, you can kind of understand it. But in another light, it's censorship, right, on accessibility to just information and being able to have different resources at your disposal.
So how does your organization communicate with prisoners and coordinate services?
So we used to basically do all of our mailings, which was, you know, receiving mail, which prisoners will request certain books that they want through letters. And they would come into the OPIRG office at Carleton University. And we would meet once a month with people prior to the COVID restrictions. And we would meet, we would read the letters, we would respond to them, and then package up our books and, you know, have them delivered to the Canada Post. But now with COVID, we've been meeting online once a month on Google Meets or Zoom. And, you know, we stay in contact that way. But myself and the other co-chair, Jane Crosby, have been sending out books directly from our homes. So, you know, we package them up, we send them out, and it's kind of coming from two people, but some of the coordination is being done by our volunteers to figure out what we have, sort of like doing more of that cataloging of what we actually have in our storage. But we're actually locked out of our larger storage, which is at Carleton University, because of the COVID restrictions. So we have a limited, I guess if you want to call it, library at our fingertips. So we've been asking the public, doing public call-outs on social media, and, you know, the community has really responded well and sent us, you know, books that we really need. So right now there's a high demand for self-help books because of, you know, prisoners being isolated in lockdowns. They're being, you know, limited to no programming. And so having that, books that help with whatever, you know, passing the time or learning a new skill, can be really helpful. Communication-wise, I personally think that COVID has increased our activism. We've gotten more organized with our administrative stuff, and our volunteer list has grown exponentially. I think we grew almost like 100%. There was four of us for a long time, just kind of doing this work sporadically, people coming and going, and now We have almost 20 volunteers that are attending monthly and helping with, you know, coordinating the book deliveries and writing responses to letters. But it takes us a little longer now because the letters will get dropped off to Jane's house and then she'll scan them and then we'll email them out to the volunteers and then they'll draft a response, you know, written, and then we'll print it and then put it into an envelope and send it out. So the process is a little longer. But even prior to COVID, like we struggled with getting volunteers. So the other co-chair had reached out to the Salvation Army Ottawa Booth Center, which they have a corrections and justice division that manages court mandated hours. So as part of folks that come into contact with the criminal justice system, they can get community service hours as part of a sentence. And we're on that list of a group that these individuals can come and meet, you know, package up books and stuff like that. So we've had a couple of students that are, or a couple of folks that come from that program that are still involved with us, but it's been more difficult because we're not meeting in person, right, to do the mailings and helping people understand how the whole process works can be kind of complicated when you're just reading like a document, you know. We're trying to get better at explaining things step by step, but it can be challenging in a virtual context. Whereas if we're all together, we're like, okay, here's the book, here's how you stamp it with a receipt, and here's where the different genres are and what we have. And yeah, like it sounds like everyone that joins Books to Prisoners often says, oh, I didn't realize how much work actually goes into packaging up books and, you know, reading letters, determining what people want to read, you know, looking in our library and seeing if we have it and then sending it out, right? And trying to make those connections with the incarcerated community is very rewarding. And yeah.
So what's been the response from prisoners towards the initiative?
Yeah, I mean, I can only speak to sort of this iteration of the group. So like I said, it started in 2003, 2002, and it's gone through many different iterations with different people running it. And, you know, the politics have changed, you know, and I mean, the group is based in abolitionist principles, but most of the people in our group are sort of social justice, human rights folks. And anytime that we've sent out, you know, letters or books, we get a lot of positive feedback from incarcerated patrons. Realistically, it's just seeing them as human, right? And sharing and building connections and having that dialogue and seeing how we can support them. You know, I think the long-term vision is to actually, you know, encourage prisoners to want to get involved in this type of work once they're released, you know, or reach out and tell us how they're doing or get involved with this type of prisoner solidarity work and sort of social justice work. And some of the feedback we've gotten is you just read it and your heart sort of glows at how happy they are that somebody actually cares on the outside, because, you know, I mean, prisons are trying to exclude these folks from society, right? Or during the holidays, like we had sent Christmas cards and we got a lot of really nice cards back, and like the volunteers were really shocked at how much just the initiative is actually doing what it's setting out to do. And yeah, like very, very positive responses, and we want to keep growing, you know. And the barriers for us are definitely in place, because you know, it's very costly to mail out. It costs us about $15 to $16 to send out two books directly to individuals. We have a partnership with Correctional Service of Canada, where they'll actually courier out boxes to prison libraries. But we're still trying to, you know, build that partnership so that books could actually be sent into libraries and then distributed to individual prisoners. Because right now, in Canada, you can't actually send books directly to prisoners. It's only in the U.S. that they allow used books sent directly to prisoners. So in Canada, we have to send the books to the libraries or to program staff or chaplaincy, and then they'll sort of distribute from there. Yeah, so that's another barrier that we face. But either way, the prisoners will send us letters and say, hey, I'm part of, let's say, the Spanish Portuguese Club or the Black Prisoners Group, or Indigenous spirituality group, and you know, they want certain types of books, and we can work with the institutional staff to get in those books and the genre that they need to, you know, get their initiative off the ground, or just, you know, start a reading group or a resource library and stuff like that.
How can community members get involved?
So basically anybody can send us an email at b2popottawa@gmail.com. It's a like a number two, so b2popottawa@gmail.com, or they can follow us on social media to sort of keep up to date with how folks can get involved or help us in, you know, things like fundraising. And you can follow us at Books to Prisoners Ottawa on Facebook and Instagram. So that's probably the best place for people to, you know, find out what we're doing and what we're up to. And we share lots of information to the public through the social media, or, you know, if people have the financial capacity, they can, you know, send us e-transfers to our email, and it can go towards offsetting our costs of mailing. But yeah, no, it's good. And we've just recently established a connection with the librarian at Ottawa Carleton Detention Center, and we're starting to send in 4 books a month right now. And we're trying to coordinate someone to drop off boxes of books. So we've, you know, more recently got in locally, but we send books to, like I said, prisons in Texas and California, and also a lot of federal institutions in Canada, all the way from BC out to Truro, Nova Scotia. So there's lots of places that are requesting books, and we're always here to provide that. It's just, like I said, we're sort of limited in our capacity, but we're going to continue to try and grow and work with penal institutions to try and get the books to prisoners. And yeah, we're trying to do a little bit more like public outreach and engagement. So like, we're trying to reach out to bookstores, local bookstores, because they're really suffering right now with the pandemic. So like promoting books that have something to do with sort of prison, incarceration, punishment, abolition, prison reform, that kind of stuff. So we've been doing like a social media campaign called #B2PBooklist, and various volunteers are like have read books, and then they kind of give a little blurb on what it's about, just to sort of educate the public more on the experiences of incarcerated people and, you know, their rights and the problems that they face in the prison system. So that's something new we're doing. And then we have an arts bursary that the other co-chair was inspired to set up because of the lack of sort of art programs and supplies for women's institutions. So we're starting to get that up and running, where you know, community-based programs that go into prisons and do arts and crafts programs can actually apply for an arts bursary from us, and we'll send them a check, you know, if they just fill out our application. So we're just getting that started. So those are kind of two things we've been up to since you know, COVID, and trying to make use of our volunteers' time, because, you know, growing from 4 to 20 people is can be challenging to stay organized, but it's also good to keep, you know, keep the work going and allowing for new innovative ideas and projects for the work.
Today, I was able to speak with Jeffrey Bradley, the co-chair of Books to Prisoners. We discussed a bit more in detail about the initiative. You can donate books or sign up to volunteer by heading on to their social media, such as Instagram at Books to Prisoners. Thank you for tuning in. I am Jamisha Millard. This news story was made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada.